Hello and welcome to Swissinfo's program for September 28th. I'm Susan Fogel-Masika in Bern. Ticino has become the first Swiss canton to approve a burqa ban, agreed to by 65% of the voters. Similar bans are in place in France and Belgium. It was one of the many issues tackled at the local ballot boxes last Sunday. Swissinfo's Gerhard Loeb in Ticino has been following the story closely. I asked him to explain the burqa ban and its potential influence on the rest of Switzerland. People call it the burqa ban, but what exactly got approval in Ticino?
Yes, it was a referendum that you cannot hide your face behind any kind of covering. But it's called burqa ban because the intention of the person who has taken the initiative for this really aimed to the burqa and the niqab.
Okay, the niqab being that other covering that just has the eyes showing, a little slit for the eyes. Mm-hmm. But now only about 100 women in Switzerland wear burqas, and hardly any of them live in Ticino. So why do you think this ban was so successful in the Italian-speaking canton?
Well, it's clear that this referendum was not made on real persons living here, but it was a kind of sign to the Islamic world that this type of covering is not well seen in this area. So I think it was very important that Ticino people wanted to give this type of sign. It was like the same when there was the referendum on constructing minarets. And there had never been a minaret in Ticino, but 68% of Ticino people voted for the ban of the construction.
Of minarets. And how did this come about then, the burqa ban? Whose initiative was that?
Yes. This is one person, and he is a politician, and he's going his own way. Let's say he's not from a political party, but sometimes he has subjects very close to the people mind, to their mood, and like in this case. So he went on to collect signatures for his referendum, and he collected 11,000 signatures. So the whole project had to be voted by the people.
And the fact that 65% of those who went to vote were in favor of it, I mean, would you say that the people of Ticino are less tolerant than people in other parts of Switzerland?
I don't think so, because we should maybe see what would happen if the whole nation could vote on this object. Up to now, there was no other canton who had the chance to vote on this subject. But let's take the canton Aargau. Also, the parliament has voted a similar idea, but this canton has asked the confederation to take the steps, and the confederation said no. So I would say, Ticino people maybe have voted in a very clear way, but I think also other cantons would probably do the same.
And so what's going to happen now?
Well, now the ban has voted. It will get into the constitution of Ticino, but there are still some steps to do. So it has to be approved by the federal parliament. And in this case, it will not be only a formal matter, but the parliament, I'm convinced, will prove the subject really very hard, because we are talking also about on freedom of religion and freedom of expressing yourself. So we know that in Bern, the federal parliament always this is very sensitive on this kind of subject, and there are many many parliaments who are not convinced about this type of approach. We have the ban in France or in Belgium, but there is still no decision of the European Court for Human Rights. So if this kind of ban is possibly can agree with human rights, European human rights. And I think this will be the issue also for the Swiss Parliament. We're still waiting on the decision from Strasbourg, but if there would be a decision like this from the court, of course it will be very difficult to apply this ban in Ticino or even in Switzerland.
And can you predict what might happen in other parts of Switzerland? For example, will this vote influence an initiative being launched in St. Gallen in eastern Switzerland?
I think the vote from Ticino, there will be some follow-up. And we have heard that there are some national parliamentarians and they wanted to make a national referendum on this issue. So I think what happened in Ticino will start discussion in other parts of Switzerland. And also this kind, the right-wing politicians, they have seen that with this issue they can make a lot of votes, and so it will be good for their political ideas. So I think they might look to make profit from this type of approach.
That was Swissinfo's Gerhard Loeb on the line from Ticino. At the national level, Swiss voters have rejected a pacifist initiative to scrap conscription. A whopping 73% voted in favor of mandatory military service. Meanwhile, another local vote will have an effect far outside of Switzerland. People in the village of Hedingen, outside Zurich, have voted in favor of donating 110,000 Swiss francs. The money will go to aid projects in countries where Swiss-based commodities giant Glencore Xstrata operates and allegedly has a poor human rights and environmental record. Hedingen received an additional 1 million francs in tax revenue from 2012, its share from the 360 million franc tax bill paid by Zurich resident Ivan Glasenberg, the CEO of Glencore Xstrata. I was recently in South Africa, where Glencore Xstrata is quite active in the coal mining industry. There I met a woman whose house is falling apart because of blasting to get at the coal. Anna Maria invited me into her home to show me the huge cracks in the walls. One was large enough for me to put my hand in. Part of her mud house has already caved in, leaving a vacant space in her yard where there used to be a room. She speaks Afrikaans, so her lawyer, Koos Pretorius, interpreted for me. He's a local who has volunteered his services. He says that the house, built in 1982, was fine until the Onverdacht mine came along. It's run by the company Genet, which has a contract with Glencore.
Nothing was wrong with the house until 2006 when the mine came. And then all of a sudden, this happens. All right. And the blasting, we've got the records, it shows that the Australians say where humans are concerned, you shouldn't blast above 122 decibels. Okay. Now, every 1 decibel, or every three decibels is a one-fold increase. Okay. We measured blasting up here up to 148. Okay. Now, you just need one or two of those blasts, and that separates the corners from one another. And now what happens is when it rains and the moisture, it gets in between the mud and the sticks, and it just erodes it away. So once it's cracked, there's nothing you can do about it. It will go. And now what she's doing is she's keeping them watertight on the outside, all right? But this, you can see this whole wall is busy falling and falling and falling, and it will one day collapse. The mine says, no problem, what we'll do is we'll put chicken mesh around it and put mud over it again.
I asked Anna Maria how she was coping with the situation.
Hoe voel jou hart oor dat die mine jou plek breek en hulle net los?
Oh, eintlik in my kop bevat nie meer reg nie. Ek het stress met die mine. Soos ek sien mense van die mine, ek wil net sommer daai.
Jy wil net sommer?
Daai.
Every time she sees the people from the mine, she just wants to die. She's under constant stress.
Jy gaat achter. Jy werk nie meer mooi met die mine. Je gaat achter, je raakt weg.
Your whole mind changes and it doesn't work anymore.
Another issue is the terrible state of the road she lives on. It's damaged on account of the heavy trucks that haul the coal away, making it impossible for her to collect her pension during the rainy season. Her neighbor, Kleinbue Malagu, told me more about that.
Once the rain rains 20 millimeters, you can't drive this road. Even the bus of the school, they can't even drive this road. So our children are on troubles. And it's the time where they will now starting to write the exams.
And so if they can't get to school, then there's, can they be excused? I mean, surely the local school board would understand that they have to do it later. I mean,
so it's difficult even if you talk with the departments. Department of Road, they can't give you any clear answer about this road. They say the road is now under the mine. So the mine must take care of the road. And the mine, they say, no, we can't take care of the road because the road is for the provincial. Now, as the people and the communities of this area, we are in between. We don't know where we must go. There is no one can help us on that.
Bakus, the lawyer, is doing his best to help.
We have a responsibility. And if we just forsake it, then if everybody does nothing, then nothing will happen. And we've made big differences. Make no mistake, we've made big, big differences. And if we can win these court cases, which have taken 10 years to prepare, then we will change the whole environment of mining. It will change. These social issues are very much part and parcel of what we've been pressing. The Department of Agriculture are now starting to prohibit mines from mining these high-potential soils. But Msimbiti is a case in point where they then tell the department that we will not mine these areas, but on their maps, they still mine them. Now, we've written them a letter and say we will criminally charge you if you do mine them at the end of the day, but they will, I know that. They'll take their chances. If we do nothing, we will lose. And if we do something, we might still lose, but at least then we can say we did our best.
I asked Glencore for a tour of a mine, or at least an interview, but they said no. And that's all we have time for this week. Thanks for listening. Visit us at swissinfo.ch for more on these and other stories. I'm Susan Fogle-Masika. To play us out, here's Red Hill Mining Town by U2.
The coal face cracked. The lines are